ideology.
Tenure.
Coffee.
Light bulb.
Critique.
Methods.
Dysentery.
Lavish.
Corduroy.
Research.
You are listening to.
You're listening to.
Prof Talk
on CITR.
Thank you very much.
Good morning and welcome to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Karen Moxley. Today on the show, we've got a very interesting interview for you. Dr. Vivian Meesday is a cancer researcher at the Wine Research Center here at UBC. And Rebecca Chung joins us now. She's the reporter who did the interview with Dr. Meesday. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Karen. I spoke with Dr. Meesday, who explained how the science behind cancer could be found in wine.
Sounds interesting. Can't wait to hear this interview.
Yes, me neither. It was a lot of fun.
So without further ado, here it is, an interview with Dr. Vivian Meesday.
I'm here with Dr. Vivian Meesday, who is a Canadian research chair in enology and yeast genomics here at UBC, and she is affiliated with the Wine Research Center. Welcome to Prof Talk, Dr. Meesday.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So what is your research focused on here at UBC?
So I have two research areas that I'm interested in. We use yeast, and by yeast I mean the budding yeast Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and we use it as a model organism. And by model organism, I mean that we use it to study basic processes in the cell that are highly conserved, so that what we're finding out is actually relevant to human cells. And then the other type of research we do is to do with the Wine Research Center, so we're interested in fermentation. And this, again, it's using the exact same organism, so we're still using budding yeast Saccharomyces cerevisiae. What we're interested in is understanding how yeast can adapt to the stressful conditions during fermentation.
So is the taste of the wine affected based on what type of fermentation?
Definitely. I think natural fermentations probably result in a more complex wine at the end. By more complex, I mean probably more different flavors and aromas, because there will be a mixture, at least at the beginning, of different organisms in there, but they're also much more risky. So it's not something that a winery would want to do if they're interested in large-scale production. So the wines that you see, let's say from Australia, that you always see the same type of wine every year after year, they'll most likely 100% of the time will be adding a starter culture because they want consistency. Whereas the smaller wineries might be more likely to try natural fermentations and produce smaller quantities but really high quality wine.
So does the amount of yeast you add into wine or grape juice kind of accelerate how fast you can get wine at the end?
That's a good question. I mean, there's definitely an amount that people routinely add. I think if you don't add enough, you're in trouble. And I think if you add too much, You probably just have a really flocculent culture, like too much yeast and not enough nutrients in there to get the final product. So there probably is a balance, but to be honest, I don't actually know okay. The details of that.
That's okay. It's just certain questions for a wine drinker, and I just needed to know. So you mentioned using yeast as a model system in understanding chromosome segregation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it common to use a unicellular or a less complex organism for a model mm-hmm. in disease research?
Definitely, and there's a lot of reasons for this. So the first reason is that the budding yeast Saccharomyces cerevisiae was the first eukaryotic genome that got sequenced. And there's a total of 6,000 genes in budding yeast. And budding yeast, because the genome size is smaller and because of it's easy to manipulate with genetics as well, we're able to do a lot with it that you just can't do with other cell types. After the genome was sequenced, the next job for the yeast community was to actually physically remove individual genes one by one. And we call that the yeast deletion collections. So we're looking at what happens if we take out gene X. Is it able to grow under these conditions? Is it dead? Is it alive? And it turns out you can actually remove about 5,000 out of those 6,000 genes, and the yeast can still live. So they're mm-hmm. called non-essential. But it depends on how you grow them, so it depends on the conditions. And we can find out a lot of interesting information this way.
just to make sure I have this right, you have yeast deletion sets. Mm-hmm. So of those 6,000 genes, you can knock out a few genes and find out their purpose.
Yeah, well, we've actually, so the yeast community systematically knocked out each one. So we have different ways of working with this, but we can then basically ask which gene is important for this part of cell division, let's say. And we can actually say, well, we can do these screens and say, well, we've got 20 genes that we know are now important. And then what people will do is when they're very convinced about the function of those 20 genes, then some people are now looking at the equivalent genes in humans. So in a human cell or a cancerous cell line, and they're actually looking and finding that, well, those genes have mutations, and that's a possibility of why they're cancerous. So something that's important for making sure chromosomes separate properly in yeast has been shown now that particular gene may have a mutation in a cancer line. And it's because we can figure out the function a lot easier in yeast that we can tell people in researching human cancers which genes to look for.
Mm-hmm. So there's 6,000 genes in yeast, mm-hmm. and you estimated that about 5,000 mm-hmm. Were non-essential. Mm-hmm. Is that a surprising number?
Yes and no. I think, so one thing that I'm interested in since working in the Wine Research Center is that when we grow cells in the lab, we're using what we call optimal conditions. So we're giving them a nice cushy environment. So in that environment where we're giving them all the sugar and nutrients they want, those 5,000 genes are not essential. But if you start stressing them, so for example, if we throw them into a wine fermentation, or if we start taking away some of their cushy lifestyle, then it'll become more important. So I think we are finding that these genes are important under different conditions.
So you also mentioned that there's a difference between yeast that's in the lab, that most labs use, and the yeast that we find in wine. So why specifically do you look at the yeast that's found in wine?
You'd be surprised to find out that they're all Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and if you look at not the DNA level but the protein level, they're over 99% similar. So the same yeast that's used in the lab versus one that's found as a clinical isolate is very, very similar. However, there are some differences, and it's those differences that make one yeast strain more suited for fermentation. And people think that the ones we use in the lab over time have lost the ability to carry out fermentation because they just don't need to, they haven't been stressed that much. Mm-hmm. So they've essentially been taken out of the wild maybe 50, 60 years ago. And since then, they've not been asked to do anything too difficult, so they've lost their ability.
So is it kind of like our appendix in humans? Kind of like...
Yes and no. I mean, definitely the wine yeast strains have acquired, they have a combination of gene, what we call gene amplification and gene depletions. So they've acquired extra copies of genes that will help them survive.
You're listening to an interview with Dr. Vivian Miesday on Prof Talk.
We are now going to practice our continental way of eating. We pick up our silverware, index finger in the back of the fork, index finger on top of the knife.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, dining at the Sub is a little less formal.
The Honor Roll Sushi Bar. Get maki rolls, rice bowls, and bento boxes made fresh all day. Don't forget to ask about our party platters. Located in the basement of the Sub, the Honor Roll Sushi Bar is open Monday through Friday. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
Welcome back to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
So I have a whole bunch of questions about cancer research.
Uh-oh.
Because a lot of novices like myself are just mm-hmm. totally intrigued but completely clueless. So when I think about cancer research, I think about how can we develop better tools for prognosis, diagnosis, and treatment. How does your research fit into this?
So as I said before, we're using yeast as a model system. And what we're really interested in is understanding the very detailed mechanisms of cell division. So by this I mean, how does the cell has quite a few things to do in just to get through one cell cycle. It has to make sure it can duplicate its DNA precisely. So that's the first thing it has to do. And then it has to separate all its chromosomes. And yeast has 16 chromosomes, so it has to precisely duplicate them and then make sure that one copy of the chromosomes goes to one, the daughter cell, and the other copy goes to the mother cell. And this is fundamental to all cell division. And there's lots of ways that this can go wrong, but the cell has what we call checkpoints. And these checkpoints stop cell cycle progression if there's a major problem. And if a chromosome doesn't attach properly, even if one out of those 16 chromosomes doesn't attach properly, the cell will recognize this and will stop itself from continuing. Because you can imagine if it kept continuing, then what you would have is one daughter cell with the wrong number of chromosomes, and that's potentially really... That's mm-hmm. exactly what's wrong with Down syndrome, is that there's an extra copy of chromosome 23. Yeast actually can tolerate a lot more what we call aneuploidy, which is extra copies. And cancerous cells have been found to also... So this would be a tumor in somebody. These tumor cells have also been found to contain aneuploidy. So this would be an extra whole set of chromosomes or odd numbers of extra chromosomes. Mm-hmm. And that would be just in that. And that's what is causing, we believe, the tumor, is the fact that there are the wrong numbers of chromosomes, and that's... cell doesn't have any control anymore over its division, and it's dividing uncontrollably, and it's creating this tumor that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. So understanding how this happens and how to prevent it is where we feel that even an organism as simple as yeast can really help.
And so when you say checkpoint, mm-hmm. is that exactly how it sounds? It's the cell kind of just checking to make sure that DNA synthesis is okay?
Yeah, so there's checkpoints throughout the cell cycle. There's DNA damage checkpoints, so that's the cell realizing that I've just been hit with a lot of damaging agents, and it's exceedingly complicated how many different ways there are to repair DNA damage. And in yeast, anyways, I'm not an expert by any means in the human field, but in yeast, the cell basically can slow itself down, and then there's repair mechanisms, so it can repair itself. If the damage is too extensive, then the cell will die, but if the damage can be repaired, then that's what will happen, and then once that's done, the cell can resume the cell cycle.
So in the case of Down syndrome and cancer, that something's happened at that checkpoint and there's kind of a loss of control? Is that what's going on?
I mean, the complication with something like cancer is it's not going to be the same for different types of cancer. It's not going to be the same scenario in everyone. And in fact, it's probably what people are starting to realize now is it's not a mutation in one protein necessarily. It's going to be multiple. So, for example, there's a few proteins that people know if you have a mutation in that, you're more susceptible to cancer. So one of the famous ones is called P53. So if you happen to be in a family that carries that, your chances of getting cancer are higher because you might just need to acquire one more mutation to develop cancer. And so breast cancer, there's certain genes that they know if you have mutations in them, you're more likely to get breast cancer. But it doesn't mean that if you have it, you'll get it. It just means that, so they think that they're, people are more susceptible because they already have this one mutation, and then if there's additional ones, or if they carry out activities that might increase DNA damage, like baking in the sun for too long or smoking, then you're going to have an even greater risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a mutation in one of these genes, like P53, mm-hmm. I've heard of HER2, or leading to breast cancer, does that mean... let me just reason this. So a genetic mutation in P53 might lead to a disruption at a checkpoint, and that could lead to cancer? Is that kind of the line of progression?
I think the line of reasoning, and like I said, I'm not an expert by any means in the human field, is that if you then acquire another mutation, so you're already at risk because you've got one problem. Let's say you're driving a car and you've got one tire that's flat. If you have another problem, your car might fall, you know, you might drive your car off the road. So it's kind of acquiring problems.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I've already, you know, I've got this problem, and if I have anything else go wrong, then
yeah, then
you're
you have
in
to
trouble.
Call CAA.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that there are different types of cancers. So are all cancer researchers interested in a specific type, or
no,
is
it's
everyone
very, yeah.
interested in all of them?
Oh, I think it's extremely complicated. So there's the BC Cancer Agency on near VGH. So you probably even if you look at their website, you'll see all the different types. There's the Prostate Research Center on Oak Street, and that's also near VGH. So there's whole buildings where people are working on different types of cancer. And people in the lab will... So there's people that work on what we call cell lines. Then there will be clinicians who might be more likely to take biopsies of tumors and look at those, and then give those samples to people in the lab to do further analysis with. But there's a lot of different cancers: breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, you name it, lung cancer. A lot of different research going on. And then us yeast people. That's another reason why yeast is simple.
just one organ.
Yeah,
and it's,
one cell. I don't have to worry about different body parts.
So do you field a lot of questions or come across a lot of misinterpretations about cancer and your research or cancer research in general?
I don't think I do as much, because most people don't really think of our yeast researcher as being somebody that even would work on cancer.
That's a misinterpretation
right there. Yeah. I remember talking to a group of people that came through, I don't know if it was an open house or something, and one person was surprised to find out that yeast even had genes. So I think there's a lot of people that don't think of other organisms as even carrying genetic material, let alone that there's actually a similarity between what's in their DNA and what's in ours. So there's that. But people are much more educated now, of course, about DNA and everything. I do worry about... I heard on the radio today as I was driving in that somebody has found cancer is linked to being stressed, so... It could be true that there's a factor there, but you start to worry that people are going to, you know, believe everything they hear about what might cause cancer. And the problem is, like I said, cancer is not just one disease. It's extremely complex, and there's lots of different types. So not one factor is going to trigger cancer in everybody. It's not going to be that straightforward. And so I do worry about... people believing like the local whatever they see on the internet and starting to take extract of this or extract of that, believing it's going to help. Or but the best thing to do, you know, is talk to your doctor and become more informed. And it's not going to be a simple, straightforward cure.
So is there a possibility of curing cancer, like just with one antidote? That's what I see in the movies a lot, is just it comes in a vial and you take it, you'll be cured.
Yeah, I don't want to be a pessimist, but I would have to say I don't think that's possible. Like I said, for people that have mutations in genes like P53 or something that causes susceptibility to cancer, I can see there being a cure for that, so that if you do have that, you might be able to one day... they might come up with some treatment so that you are not no longer, like, you can be like everybody else and no longer be more susceptible. We'll see. You know, I don't want to say, I'm not a clinician, I'm not a researcher of human cancer, so, but I think if you talk to anybody else that actually does work on cancer, they will say it's not going to be a straightforward one treatment.
especially since there's so many different types and so many different triggers.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it just only exists in the movies. What would be your advice for someone who's listening this morning who wants to know more about science research but might not have the background? How would you suggest they get started?
That's a good question. Well, I'm actually teaching a second year course right now, and there's some very good books in the UBC bookstore. You know, it depends on their time, so I'm a bit wary about the internet just because you never know if the site is accurate or not. So I would say if you're interested in biology, grab a first year textbook, even audit a class. You don't have to take it, you can just sit there, because in these large classes the professor doesn't know who's there and who's not. You can probably you know, rent some discovery videos. It depends on the level you want. If you just want an overview, there's probably you know, videos you can rent. And the other way is, you know, you can go to places like Science World, but that's not going to maybe have it at the right level. But I would probably say books is the best way. Yeah,
great. So that was the easy part. This is the hard part. These are the rapid-fire questions.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, you gotta get comfortable, get ready. So clear your mind. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and you can answer with one word.
Okay.
So first question, chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Pepsi or Coke?
Coke.
Tim Hortons or Starbucks?
Probably Starbucks.
Rain or snow?
Snow.
But you're in Vancouver.
I know, but you can ski on snow.
That's true. We can drive up to Whistler and come back to you know, Vancouver.
Do these questions, or do you have like an interpretation after I answer all these, or?
No, they're just for fun.
Oh, okay.
They're absolutely just for fun.
I thought you were going to tell me about my personality after. Okay.
No, I would actually have to do work for that. So. Sorry, you're out of luck. Cats or dogs?
Neither. Okay. I'm allergic to both of them. Okay, dogs.
Dogs. Yeah. Well, dogs from afar, I guess.
Yeah.
Phone or email?
Email.
Mac or PC?
Oh, that's a tough one, because my husband works for Apple. I'm going to have to say, I'll have to say Mac, but I use PCs because I can't afford Macs.
So again, Mac from afar.
Yeah.
Pen or pencil?
Pen.
Working on a bench or writing a grant? On the lab bench, I mean.
I prefer working on the bench.
Okay, and this is the last closing question, and the most important, red wine or white wine?
Oh, that's a good question. Red wine.
Okay. You passed. Congratulations.
Thanks.
You made it through. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for talking to me.
Time. Birds are this is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across the clouds, and we're making it like him. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville.
You've been listening to Prof Talk on CITR 101.9 FM. And that's it for today's show. Rebecca, thank you very much for being with us today and for sharing this interview.
No problem. I really hope you enjoyed it and learned some new things about wine and cancer. And I'd also like to thank Dr. Vivian Mizde for being on the show.
Indeed. And I'd also like to say a big thank you to our fabulous producer, Lex Stoymanoff. And thank you, of course, to all of you for listening. To check out a podcast of today's show, go on to citr.ca and also check out our blog at ubcproftalk.wordpress.com. My name is Karen Moxley. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.